Welcome back to Tales of Southwest Michigan's Past. This is Michael Delaware. I am your host. Now, you might be aware, if you've listened to this podcast a while, that I volunteer a lot of time at the Battle Creek Regional History Museum. And one of the premier events of the summer that we began holding last year, and it kind of started the year before with a smaller version of the event, was the Del Shannon Weekend. And it has now become an annual celebration, and we are repeating that wonderful Del Shannon Weekend to celebrate the music artist this year in June, between June 28th and June 30th. And before that, in previous years, I've interviewed several guests over the past years about the life of Del Shannon and his history. And today, I have the pleasure to welcome back to the show as a guest the WGA screenwriter, and that stands for Writers Guild of America, for the only estate-authorized script about the story of the life of Del Shannon. And his name is Gary Gerner. And we're going to talk more about the life of Del Shannon, the progress of the script, and any updates that he has on the project about this thing about the music legend, about celebrating in life. So welcome back to the show, Gary. Thank you for taking time to be on the podcast today.
Michael, can't thank you enough for inviting me back. It was a pleasure the first time, and I'm looking forward to it.
Well, good. Well, Gary, could you take a minute, for those maybe that missed the first interview that we did last year, could you start by introducing yourself and just kind of describe how you got involved with this amazing project?
Yes, absolutely. As Michael said, I'm a WGA screenwriter. I've been working as a writer for a long time. I got my start writing for one of Norman Lear's old shows, and also wrote for the Rugrats. I've had a bunch of stuff optioned for movies, and this has become one of my favorite. It's hard to say that a given script is your favorite. I guess it's like asking a parent, which is your favorite child? This has become certainly near the top of that, just because I grew up listening to Del's music, as a lot of people have. And no matter what your age is, Del's music still resonates. He was such a gigantic influence on other artists, most notably the Beatles. He was the first American artist to cover one of their tracks, in case people don't know that. Mm-hmm. And I just happened to be talking with a fellow writer friend one day who actually knew a lot more about Del's life, say, Del's more recent life at the time. Mm-hmm. And that sort of started me down the rabbit hole, in quotes, of tracking down what had happened to Del. And so I just began doing all the research.
Wow. And it kind of became a passion project that grew into this major project, because you got involved with the family too, right? You got the estate.
Yes, correct. The first point of contact was, I'm trying to remember the sequence of events, but basically nothing would have happened if it were not for Del's estate attorney, but he's really much more than that, which I'll mention in a second. Mm-hmm. Neville Johnson, here in Los Angeles.
Okay.
He's actually one of the most major entertainment attorneys in the entertainment business. Oh. Which I didn't really realize in the first moment of talking to him. And he was the one who ultimately said, "You have my permission to pursue the project."
Wow.
So that was that nothing would have happened probably if he had not granted me that permission to move ahead with it. And all the people who were kind enough to take time and speak with me, including Shirley and Craig Westover, so many people. Dan Bergois, mm-hmm. his former manager, James Popenhagen, of course, some musicians who knew him at the time. It's kind of a long list, but those, I would say, and Steve Monahan,
okay.
his former best friend, those were the people who were key in filling me in on stuff that you can't find elsewhere. Personal recollections, personal contact will always rise to the top over any research material you can find that's written or on the internet.
Right. Yeah, I think as any researcher say, I guess that's the only thing better is maybe a personal diary of the person themselves.
Really? You know. Yeah, exactly.
So, wow. So as part of writing the screenplay, you had to really dig into the details of Del Shannon's life to kind of bring out the man. Could you share maybe some of the things that you that may have surprised you when you did your research?
Well, first of all, again, just how open people were to talking with me. Obviously, they don't know me from a hole in the wall, but Neville was a little bit wary at first during our first phone call, and justifiably so. He doesn't know who I am. I knew who he was a bit, but he first warmed up in that conversation, and he began to tell me a story about Del and Shirley, or I should say Charlie and Shirley, going on an AA cruise back in the day, where Del decided to enter. Again, they went under their real names, so nobody knew who he was, and he was not wearing his toupee. Charlie Westover, okay, he's just another guy on this cruise ship. And he entered a talent contest that they held on the cruise ship. And as you may know, Del was a huge country music fan and had recorded a country music album almost at the height of his fame, his initial fame, which his manager, producers tried to dissuade him from doing. So during this talent show, he sang a country song, you know, one of his favorites. And so the MC holds his hand over each of the three top finishers. Del is one of them. And someone else wins the talent show. And Del was thrilled to have this little trophy, right? A second place trophy. And after it's over, the MC calls him over and says, "Hey, have you ever considered doing this professionally?" So that was obviously a huge laugh to Charlie and Shirley. Neville told me that story. I'd never heard that story. I don't know if it was public knowledge anywhere else. And when a couple of years later, when I had finally gotten the screenplay in the shape I wanted it to be, I called up Neville because I didn't want him to think I was just some isolated voice he had talked to a while back, to let him know that I'd finished the script and I'd love it if he'd read it. So he stopped me and he goes, "Did you put in that story I told you about the cruise?" And I said, "Absolutely." And he goes, "Send me the script." So he's a huge fan of the script. He loves it. He's helped in trying to get it around to producers. So I hope that answers your question.
Wow, that's cool. And what were some of the, I would imagine in the path of putting this script together that you had to interview some other music artists that maybe interacted or performed with Del. Who were some of the names that maybe you had a chance to talk to?
Sure. I'll tell you, I went after, just to see if I could pull it off, I went after some of the big names. I went after people like Dion, Paul McCartney, Bobby V. I think the only fellow professional musician I got to was country musician Johnny Carver. Del had been a fan of his, saw him perform at the old Palomino here in North Hollywood, and approached him afterwards and said he wanted to produce his first, I may have been his first record or his next record, I don't recall right mm-hmm. now. And Johnny Carver agreed, and Johnny Carver had some great stories he told me. So that's in the script.
Wow.
I also, a lot of people might not know that when Del had signed with United Artists Records, that the producer assigned to at least that first album was Leon Russell. Mm-hmm. Leon Russell was working as a house producer for them, and it didn't go quite as well as Del would have hoped.
Okay.
And I tried to get to Leon, but unfortunately his management seemed, I don't know what Leon's health was like at that time, mm-hmm. may have been declining already, and his management was not that keen on the discussion taking place. I also contacted, why am I blanking on his name? The lead musician for ELO, the Electric Light Orchestra,
okay.
Jeff Lynn.
Jeff, okay. Yeah.
Sorry for that blank.
Yeah.
And Jeff was at least kind enough through an assistant or his management to get back to me. At the time, he was remastering all of ELO's albums.
Wow.
And didn't have time to talk with me, but at least he wished me good luck with the project.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's interesting. So were there any other special moments along the way that when you were putting this screenplay together that you'd like to share about the process that...
Again, the process was a really voluminous research,
mm-hmm.
Whether that was interviews or accessing Brian Young's great book. I mean, his website first, delshannon.com.
Right.
I have to pay tribute to that. And of course, Brian has published an epic 800-page book about Del and his life.
Right.
So this is before the book was published. So Brian had a great amount of helpful information on his website, as did other websites, but Brian really had the bulk of the information.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, getting to talk to Shirley was powerful and emotional. There's still, you know, despite Del's passing quite a while ago, and Shirley's remarriage, there is still a powerful connection there, which really moved me.
Mm-hmm.
And so she was kind enough to speak with me a couple of times. Craig was, their son was kind enough to speak with me. And of course, James Popenhagen had great stories about the early days because he was a longtime family friend.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Monahan had great stories because he and Del were on some of those Dick Clark rock and roll caravan shows.
Yeah.
So he had great stories. So it was just the privilege and the honor of being able to talk to people who knew him best.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I would characterize it. And I don't want to leave out, again, Dan Burgoyce, who mm-hmm. was so helpful in two or three interviews as well.
Yeah. Well, I have to say, I've gotten to know Shirley and Craig,
yep.
And they're just wonderful people. And Shirley has,
yep.
I don't know that you could find a lovelier lady that is just so full of joy and just,
yep.
She's really such a wonderful person. She came out to the Del Shannon weekend last year, and she's up there in age, but she,
yes.
you know, we took good care of her. We put her in a golf cart. We took her around, you know, I even assigned two ladies that were volunteers to be totally her, you know, assistants throughout yep. the day, bringing her water. And it was just, she's just such a wonderful lady to be around with. She's so, very much wanting to preserve the memory of her late husband, and she was so
yep.
happy with the results of, you know, and I'm thinking, I'm putting this event on, this is the first year, I was all these hectic details, I'm thinking, oh, I just, this was just awful, you know, as a planner, these thoughts go in your head, but she just was so,
yeah.
made it, so put everybody at ease, and it was like, you know, this is the first year, you guys
yeah.
did an amazing job, and they invited me over to a special surprise party that they had in celebration of the first inaugural event. They had a special cake, and I was like, wow, this is
nice.
I felt like that was, I was part of that celebration that they brought me to that, and I just thought that was wonderful. They're just very nice people to be around. And
she was very kind to me. I think in a conversation I had with her last year via Facebook, she kind of poked me in a funny way and said, so when is this getting off the ground? You know, I'm not getting any younger.
She has a wonderful sense of humor, that is for sure.
yes. So I told her I'm doing everything I can.
Yeah. Well, part of Dale Shannon's legacy that I think I always found interesting was that he was very altruistic, you might say, with other upcoming artists. I mean, he took Bob Seger under his wing and helped him get going and gave him some support. And he did that with some other artists that he was always willing to help somebody else, you know, and that's very interesting to see that, you know. It was,
yeah. Smith, he did that with Smith, of course, basically producing their first album. And I had tried, while I was writing it, to get in touch with Gail McCormick, the former lead singer of Smith, who was very talented. And that proved to be an immensely difficult task. I didn't know if she was still with us at the time. Many people have, of course, passed on. But ultimately talked to a disc jockey in the Midwest whose name escapes me, but he had great stories just about the rock music of that era. And ultimately, and he had known Gail for a long time, but he did not know where she was. And then I found out kind of after the fact that Gail had left the music business a long time ago and had returned, I think, to her hometown in the Midwest. And ultimately she had passed away, so it was not possible to speak with her. But that's one of the ones that got away, I suppose. I would have liked to have spoken with her.
Wow. So that would have been a really interesting, I bet she had some stories that could have added some different color to the background of this experience.
Yep. That's why I tried to track down all those other musicians, because they'd all either worked with him or knew him. One of the funny things I discovered, or more intriguing things, when Dell had played the Royal Albert Hall. Yeah. I don't know if you've ever seen that poster, because it's online. You can see it. Dell is the headliner on that show, and there's a bunch of other artists on the show. You know who is second on the bill?
I think it was the Beatles, wasn't it?
That's correct. Yeah. You win a new Buick. No, I'm joking.
I'm sorry. I have to say I learned that from James Popenhagen. But
Okay. Yeah. No, it was. If you see the poster online, and yes, it's available. It's just sort of really difficult to wrap your head around that. The Beatles obviously had not come to the United States yet. This was in 63, I believe. Dusty Springfield and her first group with her sisters, I believe, was on that bill as well. So when you see something like that, it's just startling. What? Dell was a headliner and the Beatles were second on the bill.
Yep.
That's actually where Dell got permission from John Lennon to record one of their tracks.
Yep.
And he said, yeah, go ahead, do whatever you want. And then as he's leaving the stage, this is during rehearsals, John comes back to him and says, you know, Brian Epstein isn't going to be really happy if you cover the track before we release it.
Right.
But if you really want to do it, go ahead.
Yeah.
And that's what Dell did.
So let's go back to maybe some of Dell's early life. Were there any, I think last time we talked, you went over this parade or something that happened in Battle Creek. Are there any other early stories from his life in Michigan?
That was the story, you know, I think in his initial burst of fame where they had him come back and then they had to cancel the principal of his high school, who had one of the people who had invited him back, and Del was just going to do, I think, basically a solo kind of performance in the high school gym, mm-hmm. Or auditorium. I'm not familiar with the high school. And at the last moment, it got pulled, only because people started getting nervous about how high school kids might react to seeing Del Shannon in person, yeah, performing in their high school, right? Mm-hmm. And so they scrapped the live performance, and someone came up with the great idea, oh, let's rent a flatbed truck and just kind of do it on the fly at night, mm-hmm. et cetera, et cetera. So that's what was done instead. But just the early years of growing up, his father was not very supportive of his interest in music. His mom was much more supportive.
Yep.
His mom is the one who got him a cheapo Woolworth's guitar, I think it was, probably made out, I don't even know if it was made out of wood, mm-hmm. But that was his first guitar. I think it was $5 or maybe from Sears. I think it was in a Sears catalog.
I see.
Where he saw the guitar.
Yeah, that's interesting to note that he didn't have early support from his dad, but I guess his dad probably changed over the years, you know, when he did have...
You would hope.
Yeah.
Well, when Del had his own, label called Burley Records, that mm-hmm. was a contraction of both parents' first names.
Okay. So do you have any news for us about the status of the screenplay?
I have some.
Okay.
I have some. I wish I could say, yes, the screenplay has been sold, mm-hmm. and we're going into production tomorrow. That hasn't happened yet. I will certainly let you know. Uh-huh. I'll let my brother know first, probably.
Yeah.
But the two bits of information. One is that the Writers Guild, in conjunction with the Screen Actors Guild, has what's called a table read series out here. And for those who are unfamiliar with that expression, uh-huh. it basically means that a group of actors gather around a conference room table, uh-huh. small, medium, or large, depending on the cast. And this was a large one. And they read the script aloud so the writer can hear it.
Okay.
So we had a nice large group because many of them doubled and tripled up in reading different parts, because there's approximately 80 speaking roles throughout the course of the script,
okay.
which covers a few decades of time.
Mm-hmm.
And they were terrific. They did a great job. And this was held at the Hollywood location of the American Film Institute. So that was nice to be up there and be sitting around this large table with all these terrific actors. And what was particularly touching and powerful for me was the actors coming up to me afterwards individually and telling me how great they thought the script was. Nobody was prompted to do that.
Wow.
Of course, I wasn't paying anybody to say mm-hmm. that. And one of the actors who played Shirley actually came up to me and said she had had some personal experience with either someone who might have been a significant other or someone in her family who had a substance abuse issue.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, you really nailed what it's like for a member of that person's family to have to go through this.
Wow.
Not just what they were going through. So that was really touching to me. And I got a nice round of applause from everybody when the reading ended. So that was very moving. That was last year. And then more recently, you may have seen or at least initially heard the Beatles release that long ago song that John Lennon had written, Now and Then.
Okay.
And he recorded that song on a little cassette machine, the kind many of us had way back when cassettes, you know, it wasn't even a stereo machine. It was like a little monaural thing,
yeah,
about the size of a maybe a large book kind of. And so they hadn't been able to figure out how to, the Beatles I'm talking about, hadn't been able to figure out how to separate his voice from the piano he was sitting at his home. And it was, again, it was the crudest kind of recording you could make, except maybe for sitting outdoors.
Right.
It, you know, it wasn't professional at all. So they were finally able to do that. They were able to remaster the song and add additional instruments, et cetera. And Paul and Ringo were obviously involved. And when I saw the mini documentary that had been made in conjunction with the song Now and Then, I thought, gee, I wonder who directed that. So I tracked down the director, a British guy by the name of Oliver Murray, and sent him a message, and he wanted to see the script.
Wow.
So I'm still hoping that he is interested. It's been a while. That can be a good sign. It can be a bad sign.
Yeah.
Not everybody, just like people don't always react to produced movies in the same way, people don't often react to scripts in the same way.
Right.
So I'm hoping that he does react. I'm in the process myself of getting new representation, meaning a new agent or manager, and hopefully that whoever that is will help elevate efforts regarding this script.
Well, that certainly would be exciting to see somebody big like that take it over. I mean, he certainly worked on that project with the Beatles,
absolutely.
So he has a
absolutely
he has, must have an affinity for that era's music, you know.
Exactly. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed, but I'm also, as a writer, one of the things you learn is that old expression, never put all your eggs in one basket. You try to get your material around to whoever you think might best respond to it.
Yeah. So this, here in Battle Creek, we have Del Shannon Weekend coming up. It is June 28th. We have James Popenhagen taken to the stage again. He's doing the Del Shannon Show as a concert. And we're doing it at the Kellogg Arena this year, so it should be a really exciting venue. And for those listening out there, I can put the links to where you can buy tickets in the show note description. I'm also going to put the link in the show note where they can pick up Brian Young's book that Gary mentioned here.
And if I may add, if someone wants to read the first 10 or so pages of my script, they can do that at my webpage, which is Gary S, like Stephen, Gerner.com. GarySGerner.com.
Okay, great. I'll make sure that link is in the description as well, so those that are driving and listening to the show, they can just pull over at some point and click on that.
Over is a good idea.
Exactly. And so there's also, part of the Del Shannon Weekend, we have a classic car show at the Lila Arboretum on Saturday. And then we have a historic legacy event at the museum on Sunday. And this year, I worked it out with Craig Westover that we would do not just the historic legacy of Del, but we're going to talk about the whole music industry of other artists that came out of Battle Creek. Del was certainly our biggest, but there were other people that had part of their life that passed through Battle Creek. And so we're going to talk a little bit about Junior Walker and the All-Stars and Wade Flemons and a lot of other artists that started their early period of life at a bar called the El Grotto Lounge here in Battle Creek. Did you know that Junior Walker sang his famous song Shotgun? Shotgun right here in Battle Creek?
No, I had no idea. I didn't even know he was from there. I mean, that's such a, all you got to do is hear that opening saxophone riff and boom, you're just eager to hear the rest of it.
He created that song and played it here at the El Grotto Lounge. So very similar to Runaway being its first, was first played here at the at that other place here in Battle Creek. It was the High Low Club. That's what it was.
That very funky bar restaurant kind of place in the bottom of that let's just say it wasn't the Hilton.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, so quite early, a couple of music legends there that we're going to talk about. So it's going to be kind of fun. And, of course, Dell loved classic cars. If you talk to any of his family, they always talk about how he had a passion for Cadillacs and things like that. But also the name Dell, he chose part of that from one of the Cadillacs he was driving, the DeVille. I think it was Cadillac DeVille.
Actually, if I remember correctly from my research, you may be correct. It's been a while since, needless to say, I looked at the research. But it's, I think, when he was working as a carpet salesman, and I think he saw somebody pull in and they were driving a Cadillac DeVille,
right?
And he focused on that word DeVille and he contracted it, obviously.
Correct. Yeah, that's the story I heard. It was that when he was working at the carpet factory, that's how he came up with that, the DeVille.
And then I'm glad my memory is still intact.
And the name Shannon actually came from a wrestler of the time that was very popular. So there's a little bit of car in his name as well. So it kind of fits.
Especially being in Michigan.
Yeah, exactly. So is there anything else that you'd like to tell the audience a little bit about Dell Shannon's legacy before we kind of wrap up? And
I would just add, for the people who don't know, and Michael certainly does know, there is a Facebook page, actually, I think a couple of them, but the primary one is the Dell Shannon Fans United Facebook page.
All right.
And Johnny Gable, who created that page, was kind enough to kind of pass the torch to me. So now I'm the moderator of that page.
Oh, okay,
and,
great.
So it's great to see fan reactions. I know when I have mentioned, I don't run around that page saying, hey, I wrote the screenplay. Mm-hmm. But when someone might mention, gee, why isn't there a movie about Dell? Then I mention my work, and people are genuinely excited. And I think Brian's book may have helped drive what's going on there now, which is so many people have been signing up on that page, it's almost impossible for me to keep up and keep approving new members.
Yeah, and you also mentioned that it's on a popular TV show, that Runaway became the theme song of a popular TV show. Well, you want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. For those of you who were fans of the Showtime TV series Dexter, the final season of Dexter, which is now, a couple of years old, I guess. Mm-hmm. The theme of Dexter's final season was young women, like in their 20s or so, who were runaways themselves, and the villain of that season taking advantage of that and doing what villains do.
Right.
And Runaway became the de facto theme of that season. So it was played multiple times.
I think any time a TV show picks up a theme song or an old song from the past, it becomes popular with the current generation again, you know?
Oh, absolutely. I think that's what, that was one of the nice side benefits of the Dexter series, that people might have tuned in who may have never heard of Dell Shannon, and yet there was his music, and that song is as vital and powerful today as it was when it was first released.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, and I think with the combination of your pushing through Hollywood, trying to get the screenplay out there, Brian's book that came out finally last year, that massive book called Runaway, I think is what the title.
Yep.
Yeah, and then, of course, what we're trying to do at the museum on a small local level, but I think that the Dexter show also helps keep his music alive. And anytime, we have that kind of constant promotion of the artist, somebody's bound to pick up your screenplay and say, hey, this is the right timing.
That's what I hope. You might want to, I don't know if this is something you want to pursue. Mm-hmm. You might want to get in touch with Showtime.
Okay.
And tell them, of course, about the museum. And maybe there's a way where someone could watch an episode or two, maybe the first episode of the series, of that final season, just so they can hear Dell's music being used to such great effect.
That's a good idea. That's a great idea. Well, Gary, it has been wonderful speaking with you again, and I will put out there again that is GarySGerner.com is your website, so if they want to read some of the screenplay, they should definitely check that out. And is there a way for them to reach out to you or send you a message? The best way is maybe the Facebook page? Or
The Facebook page is probably the best place.
Okay. That is, it's been always wonderful talking to you, Gary. Thanks for coming on and taking time out of your busy schedule to talk a little bit about Del Shannon. You know, looking forward to having a successful Del Shannon weekend this year. That's again June 28th to June 30th here in Battle Creek. And there is a Del Shannon weekend Facebook page that we just started, just to kind of start building the fan following of the weekend itself. So if you're out there on Facebook, go ahead and check that page out as well. Any last minute things you'd like to mention, Gary, before we wrap up?
I just want to thank you again for inviting me here. I wish I could come to the weekend, but that's not possible. And keep doing the work that you're doing, and collectively we'll just keep Dell's memory alive as it should be.
Absolutely. And I'll get you out here one of these years when your schedule allows it. You know, hopefully we'll do a big premiere of the movie here in Battle Creek. That would be very exciting.
That would be wonderful.
Looking forward to it. Well, always a pleasure, Gary. Thank you for coming on today. So once again, I have been speaking with Gary Gerner. He is the WGA, that stands for Writers Guild of America screenwriter, and he's written the only estate-authorized script on the life of Del Shannon. So it's been a fascinating talk. And as always, he has some amazing stories to tell. And as always, if you'd like to reach out to me, you can find me at michaeldelaware.com. I will put the link in the show note description of how you can find tickets for Del Shannon weekend, including the concert, as well as getting a copy of Brian's book, as well as the link that Gary shared about his website, and you can take a peek at the upcoming script that is going to feature the life of Del Shannon. That should be a really exciting read for fans. And you can also follow me on Facebook at Michael Delaware Author. Definitely go over and like the page Del Shannon Weekend. That way you can keep up to date with the latest announcements. And until next time, when we take another journey into yesterday, we explore even more fascinating tales of Southwest Michigan's past. Thank you for listening.